Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
Purification. What do we think of when we hear the word purification? Water filter. That's about it, right? In our current day, purification is so far off of our mainstream consciousness that all we can think of is a water purifier. But purification is something on the spiritual path that we're going to contemplate today together. This is part three. The spiritual path, part three, purification. Part one was about how we land on the spiritual path. Very often in a very awkward, uncomfortable way, such as falling off of a cliff or through the birth canal. Part two was contemplating the theory, the elevator theory, I call it, and it's that truth is dynamic. So truth is truth, but our perception and our reality from where we're observing truth is different. When we're on a bottom layer, we're a little clouded, we're a little ignorant of the truth of truth, and we have to move up the elevator to get cleaner, more clear observations of what that truth is. How do we move from one floor to the next? Through purification. And that's what we're going to cover today. Purification means to disseminate, to remove that which is impure, to get rid of all the junk that doesn't belong there anymore. So that the purity, the truth of that situation or that individual or that element, say gold, can be expressed fully. Now, I was looking at gold and thinking, my goodness, what a process. If you've ever really studied the process of getting gold to be gold, no wonder it's precious. And when we look at our own selves as human beings, as units of energy, as expressions of the divine, that's precious. We kind of forget that we're precious here, now, flaws included. Precious. You are precious. But we forget that. We get all confused and we go into the chaos and the drama and all of this other stuff and we get distracted like crazy from our own preciousness. And in cultivating preciousness, purity, truth, on the spiritual path, we're going through a refinement process. And the refinement process is this. Awareness is the first thing. Awareness is 50% of the cure of the problem. When we're in the problem, we're in the consciousness of the problem. And we're trying to create a resolution in the consciousness with the same problem that we're using. And it gets all mixed up, and no wonder we get stuck, and no wonder we get frustrated, and no wonder we get distracted, because we can't cure the problem within the problem. We have to pop out of the problem so we can observe it. That's awareness. Now we're outside of the problem. We can see the problem. We're not in the problem. We are not the problem. And we can move from in the problem awareness. And with awareness comes clarity. One of my most favorite things of the spiritual path is clarity. Because when we're clear, we're like, oh, yeah. It's so wonderful to be clear. Because we've moved out of that vibration, moved into a clearer vibration. And from clarity, we have choice. Thank goodness. And whenever we're in a place of choice, we are in a place of power. I can choose this miserable idea. I can choose this one. I can go for this one. That's powerful, to be in a place of choice. When we are in a place of choice and then we go ahead and make good choices, that's a whole nother level, but when we make good choices, now we are in the creative process. When we are in the creative process, we are one. We are totally in alignment with the vibration of truth. Because in there, in the creative process, stuff comes to us. that we wouldn't even think with our little brain here, our ego, can't even touch the creative process and all the beauty that can come through. So we become one. This teaching is a metaphysical teaching, and there's a few laws and principles that we focus on and use. In physics, they teach the laws of the physical realm. So for instance, gravity. In metaphysics, beyond the physical, they'll teach things like the law of abundance. So it's still gravity, but how does that gravity work in the unseen realm, in the invisible realm? Another truth that I love that's in this teaching is oneness. I believe that I'm a unit, a little tiny cell in the human body on this planet that is also a living organism. And we function with the trees and the animals and the elements and the consciousness and all of that. And we're this organism that's connected to the solar system, that's connected to the cosmos, the universe. And I'm this one teeny weeny little unit. And when I can be clear and clean of ego and distractions, I can be in the flow and in the function and in the rhythm of that whole consciousness. And that's a beautiful thing. So when I'm in the flow, I'm good. When I'm out of the flow, I'm confused, I'm distracted, I'm chaotic. When I'm in the flow, I'm pure. When I'm out of the flow, impurities have me congested. When we think of purity, we can look at a baby. They're gorgeous. Everybody loves looking at a baby. There's a baby, and you're like, can I look at your baby? And the mom's like, yeah, look at my baby. And the baby's all in bliss. No thoughts and none of all that garbage that we have as adults. They're just in the moment. Oh, look at my toe. Wow, that's so cool. Oh, look at this human being staring at me, and they're loving me, and oh, I'm loving them, and it's so cool. They're just in the moment. And babies happen to have this luxury of their needs getting met. Shelter, food, water, milk at that point. Warmth and connection. So connection for a baby is the physical touch. They really do need to be held. Now that's purity. Wouldn't we all feel wonderful if every time we had a little disturbance, there was two big arms cuddling us and saying, it's okay. And we're all upset and we're freaking out. We don't know what's happening. And we just get comforted. It's okay. It's just gas. So that we could work it out. Things are wonderful. And then also, another form of purity to me in my observation is the elders. And when an elder has lived their life, they're just kicking it. They don't get involved in all the drama anymore. They've had enough. They see the patterns. They know the drill. They know what's their business and what's not their business. So if you see an elder in prime elderliness, they're kicking it. They're not stressed out because they know they can't do anything anyway. They know you're not going to listen to them anyway. Like, they get it. And they have this wisdom that's a form of purity to me. I have an Uncle Tony, and he's the last of 8 children. The mom died when he was very young, and he grew up kind of on the streets of Detroit. And he's kind of rough, you know. He's got his edges. And I call him for counsel all the time. And I'll be freaking out about something, and I'll be like, Uncle Tony. He's like, hey, babe, what's up? And I'll lay out my issue, and he's like, ah. And he'll simplify it in 2-3 sentences. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's so clear. Because he operates from a place of clarity. And you know what his answers are consistently? Love, kindness, forgiveness. Real simple. And he's lived a full life with all kinds of stories. And that's his purity. So when we look at babies and we look at elders, we say, okay, they've got something going on there. If I'm in a place of chaos, how can I get there? And what is it that we need to become aware of so we can make a different choice about? Stress. Medical industry is finally catching up with those of us who are a little more thoughtful. and saying stress is the number one cause of the diseases and the maladies, the bad things, the sicknesses that are happening. It's stress related. Okay, so let's break it down. What's stress? If I was brought to a field, a civilian was brought to a battlefield with a warrior, some army guy who's like got it down, he's lived that, he knows all the answers. And we were both popped on the battlefield. Everything's going on, chaos and pandemonium. His reaction would be, oh, okay, okay. My reaction would be, I'm more stressed out, and he's not, but we're in the same experience. So stress is relative to our interpretation, our experience, and our evaluation of what it is. What's the truth of this stressful situation? When a baby's raising up and they get to about two, and they start realizing the sense of separation, like, hey, I'm crying my head off, and my parents aren't coming, and this is not okay. When we have an experience, our first reaction is emotional. And emotions don't really have a bunch of words. So then our brain comes in and says, I'll figure this out for you. And then it comes up with the best conclusion that it has at that time. So it's amazing. I do this work called internal family systems. And with my clients, we go into the subconscious. And there we expose events that have happened that have caused shifts in the person's history. Because a shift will happen to us, and say a negative shift, and we're not okay, our energy world is off, we're having an emotional experience, our brain comes into the rescue, our ego, and says, let me handle this, I'll figure it out. Crying your head off, no one's coming, well, you're not important, that's why. And the baby's like, I'm not important. Well, I was like, I really felt important, like, what, so then we kind of look, like, maybe. And then a few more experiences happen to concur, and then we're like, oh, well, I guess I'm not important. Okay. So we don't really try at school. We don't make the friends that we think we could make because, you know, they're better than us. And we go to college, we just pick something mediocre because we haven't explored our dreams because, you know, we're not important. And we go to work, and we don't try so hard, and we just kind of muddle along, and, you know, we pick somebody who's going to work for us, for family, and like whatever, and da-da-da. Because all of these decisions go on the foundation of, I'm not that important. But remember, we're precious. So there's been a disconnect. So when we go into our subconscious, we start remembering, oh, this event shaped my ideology of who I am, and that was based on a 3-year-old evaluation of the situation. What? So that we can change things out. I had a lady come in last week, 73 years old, and she gave me permission to tell her story. And she comes in, and she's all cute. She sits down, and I said, well, how are you feeling? And she said, scared. And I'm like, oh, good. I'm recognizing that she's in a place of awareness. She's not in her problems, because when we're in our problems, we're like, yeah, I got this. But when we're out of our problems, we're like, oh, not okay. So I said, okay. So we went in, we dug deep, we did some emotional work. And then when she opened her eyes, she goes like this. Ah. And I was like, yeah. Look at her. In her wisdom, she's like, I got to face these things. I'm alive today. Might as well get it worked out. Called her the next day. How are you feeling? Oh, fantastic. I feel so light. I feel like 20 pounds have been lifted from my shoulders. I'm so happy. Great. Call her a few days later, and we're just talking about something, and she's like, oh, guess what? I said, what? And she said, I was in the car this morning, and I realized I forgot my cane. Oh. She goes, and then you know what else I realized? What? I haven't been experiencing the pain since we did the work. Ah. And you know what else I realized? I'm like, wow, this lady's on it. I said, what? She said that I created that pain because of the relationship I was in, da-da-da-da-da. She rolled it out. And I said, wow. So she's elated. That's the kind of wisdom that we have when we can work with our emotional body. So when we evaluate stress, the stress is coming from our historical perception, our conditioning along the way, along life, that has put us in that framework. Stress is an inside job. We all point, oh, it's the work, it's the relationship, it's the way I was raised, it's this, it's that, la, 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 that's why. I have every excuse in the world to be a jerk. No, those are all the things that we like to point to, but my reaction of life events is my stress level. So what am I in charge of in my purification process along the spiritual path, trying to get this elevator to go up for my consciousness into peace and harmony? Kind of that's the goal. Because we came in that way, and we're leaving that way if we have it together. When we can look at our thoughts and our feelings, that's how we reduce our stress level. When I was 18, I was living with some family, and it was my grandfather's cousin. So he's my third cousin. He was an elder, and he was a metaphysician, and he taught classes. And he would say, "Stand, porter, at the door." And I'd be all, "What's a porter and which door? And why can't you just speak regular English?" Have you read Science of Mind? That's the time period between the 1920s and the 1940s where these people were starting to wake up. And they needed some language around this metaphysical notion. So they would do the best they can and create their own words and everything. So Stan Porter at the door comes from that languaging. So he would be trying to explain to me what this porter was. And because I'm a dancing queen, I would hit the clubs. And I'm like, "Bouncer, you're talking about a bouncer." And he's like, "Yes, that's it, a bouncer. Yeah, bouncer. Okay, we're all speaking the same language." So in this door, what's the door? The door to our mind, the door to our thoughts. It's been recorded that we're up to like 60,000 thoughts a day will pass through our mind. So no, there's no tracking all of that. If we can track maybe 300, we're doing good. And it's to separate. It's to become that baby within. So in this internal family systems work, the premise is there's our true self, our pure self, our divine self. No agenda, no attachment, careless, chill, great. Drama happens, oh, that's fine. Wonderful things happen, oh, that's fine. Like it's all good. So it's like our baby within, or who we were before we came into this incarnate suit, and who we'll be when we leave. So that's our true self, our pure self. And when we can distract and get rid of all of this other stuff, then we can become more one with the universe. So this other stuff is ego-based, fear-based, and all these voices in our head all the day are not me thinking all these thoughts. Me is back here observing, going from a monologue to a dialogue, and watching everything play out. Most of these parts are ideas that come from our evaluations. So they'll be buzzing through and buzzing through. What we can do now is start tracking our thoughts. Start tagging them. Oh, that one. Okay, that one said that one. Okay. It's amazing. It's like a full-time job to track our thoughts. But it's way better than paying attention to all the chaos and feeling stressed out and helpless. So when we can stand porter, bouncer, at our door of our mind, we can start becoming aware and move up the ladder to better choices. So what does your bouncer look like? What does your door look like? Does your door look like a European wooden door, big, elegant door? Does your door have dancing Vegas girls all lined up to get there? Does your door have beads on it? If you're ADD, there is no door. Like every thought pad, there's a vacuum. Everything just comes in. So what does your door look like, and what does your bouncer look like? Does he have a three-piece suit on? No nonsense? Does he have a muscle shirt on? Big guns? Does he have aviators on, mirrored? What does your bouncer look like? Who do you want standing at your door of your mind? And he's evaluating. Not only is he good looking, he better be smart. He better be instinctual and intuitive. So he can say, yeah, that thought, they can come in. Because there's a party going on in here. A lot of going on in here. But you can come in. And you look like trouble. I don't know about you. And in my dancing days, I'd go off outside to cool off. And I'd become friends with the bouncers, and I'd watch them do their work. And it's like, that's a tough job. So this scrawny little guy will come up, and he'll be trying to get in. It's just like one of our obnoxious thoughts, a worrisome thought. And they'll be like, look, I got to get in. You know, like, I know so-and-so and this and that, blah, blah, blah. And the bouncer will be like, the whole time. And this guy's chatting away, like trying to convince how important he is and that he needs to be in there. And the bouncer knows, I'm not even going to get into this conversation. I know where it's going. It's going nowhere because you're not getting in here. So that's how firm we have to be with these thoughts who are so convincing that they need to occupy our time and space. So a worrisome thought will come up and be like, oh man, you know, we got a lot to do. Like there's a whole thing that we got to do and we got to handle this and I don't know what to do and I'm freaking out. And the bouncer's like, mm-mm, oh no, you are not coming in there. No, I got a list. Look, I made a list. I'm working with a list maker and we made a list of all these really important things that we have to worry about right now. And I have another helper next to my bouncer. And she says, it's okay. No matter what, it's okay. So the stressful part is like, no, we got to worry. And she's like, no, it's okay. So then the worrisome part is like, I'm trying to tell you, it's not okay. There's like nothing okay. And she's like, no, I'm telling you, it's okay. Because she's connected to the universal consciousness where everything seems to work out. Have you talked to an elder? They're chill. They're it's okay. Things will work out. How many times have you heard an older person say that to us? Because guess what? They always work out. They work out for the worse, they work out for the better, but they work out and we either learn or we don't. But things will work out. Stressing is a waste of energy. It's negative prayer, really, worry. So then that worrisome part, trying to argue with it's okay, gets confused and their brain starts cracking. And they're like, and they'll walk away, just like that guy trying to get in the club. So they walk away confused. And I'm sure Genghis Khan and his, like, how to beat an opponent, confuse him would be on the list of things to do. And it works. If you confuse your stressful part, it works. And then as you're tracking, you may hear your mother's voice. And the bouncer knows, like, unless it's I love you, you're out. Now, this is not my mother, but a typical mother of the obnoxious kind would be like, hi. And you're like, aw. The bouncer's like, I know where this is going. And she's like, I just came in. I got one little message. And the bouncer's like, this is not one message. She says it's one message. And then if I let her in, it's like all day long conversation in the head. No. So she's like, hi, it's time for a haircut. And the bouncer's like, no, we're good. And the lady's like, it's okay. And she's like, no, it's time for a haircut. And she knows she's not going to get in. It's not your real mother. It's your mother's voice. So she's like, can I leave a note? It's like, go away. So that's standing porter at the door. The other one is emotions. How can we deal with emotions? It's our thoughts and our emotions that will reduce our stress level, bring us into a place of peace and connectivity and purification. The process is like chopping wood and carrying water. There's a Zen joke, and it's not a joke, but it is a joke. The Zen joke says, what does a person do before enlightenment? Chop wood, carry water. What does a person do after enlightenment? Chop wood, carry water. Have you ever tried to chop wood? Like, really? It's hard. In my case, it's dangerous. It's a lot of work. I mean, it is serious work. And carrying water, that's no fun either. It's heavy. It spills. It splashes. There's terrain. You can't get distracted. And besides the workload that you're trying to do, you now you have to worry about it splashing out because that's the whole point, is to get the water up the hill with Jack and Jill so you can accomplish whatever it is that you need to do that day. So it's like layer upon layer of work and anxiety and like tension. And then you try to be creative. Ego will come in and be like, oh, I'll figure it out. Let's put it in a wagon. In the wagon, it bumps all over and the water splashes out for sure. Now you've wasted time. It's just like chopping wood, carrying water. It's consistent. This work of monitoring and being with is very consistent. The thing about emotions is they don't have language. So it's kind of like the emotions is the high feminine and the thoughts is the high masculine. And have you ever had to try like to connect with that? It's very difficult. So the emotions is the world of no words. And for us to be in a world of no words is very uncomfortable because we spend so much time in our head trying to figure it all out. We think we have the answers, but still we're in a place of stress. So the mind is only a limited access. The mind is our consciousness. And between a fight between the consciousness and the subconscious will win, hands down. Because our consciousness is an attempt of understanding the divine through the ego. But the emotions are closer to our humanness of why we're here and how we experience the world. So things are going to happen. Life is going to happen. Junk is going to happen. Bad things are going to happen. How we deal with it is up to our choice. It's up to us. So when we do our emotional work, it's to be with our emotions. I have a friend, and he gives me permission to share his story. He's an actor in Los Angeles. And the whole thing about being a good actor is honesty. Honesty with your emotions. Honesty with the character, being true to the character. So even if the character doesn't look good, but you're true to the character, the story will be told properly. So he's all about honesty. And recently he told me that he has figured out, he has become aware that the drinking in his life needs to go. And he's not an obnoxious person. He's not a sloppy drunk, but he drinks. He's a great father, a very good husband, very helpful in the world. Everybody's his friend, a loving heart. But he's realized this alcohol in my life is not so good. So I text him and I said, so by the way, how long have you been drinking? And he said, oh, since like 2, my mom and dad used to put wine in my bottle to keep me quiet. So it's in his blood. So when something's so integrated into us, and we think it's so natural and normal to us, and we finally figure it out, I'm sure he's been told 1,000 times by other people, but not until we figure it out ourselves do we move into that awareness. It's an inside job. All of this is an inside job. So he became aware, like, oh, I got to handle this issue. So he started going to AA, and he's like, okay, I get it. But I don't really like this consciousness. I understand these steps, but I need more. And he researched, and he couldn't find anything more. So he's like, I got this. I've been getting out of trouble my whole life. I can figure this out. So he said, I got to be with myself. I got to get honest with myself in a new way, awareness, and a new level of different choices. So he's taken up walking. He kisses his children goodnight. His wife, okay, I'll be back. And he walks the streets of Los Angeles talking to himself out loud. He's an actor. He can get away with that. And he does the work that I do with my clients. And he pulls out these parts and he starts talking to them. And he just gets honest. And he talks and he talks and he talks and he walks and he talks. And his friends call him the Walker now. He's got this new name. He's the Walker. And I'm sure he looks like a crazy person, but he's not. So he's very polite. If somebody's walking towards him, he'll tone it down. The dialogue will still be going on in his mind, and as soon as they pass, he starts being vocal about it again. Journaling is another fantastic way how we can be with our emotions. Because when we're doing this, we're in the creative flow, and stuff will just start coming through. And then when we're like, then we become the observer, and we're observing the thoughts and the feelings that are coming through, then we can say, oh, clarity. Oh, that's what I'm doing. That's the game I'm running on myself. Wow, that's not any good. I'm going to make a different choice. And then we go ahead and make a different choice. So I have a part called the Detroit Girl. And she's 17, and she's a badass. I'm afraid of her. And she's got her tight jeans on and her hoodie, her brown hoodie, and all kinds of stuff in her pockets. And black and white. Her world is black and white, and a lot of it is black. Because she can see. She can see reality. She can see how dark things are. She can see how jacked up everything is. She can see how unfair the world is. And she's mad. And I keep her way tucked away in the background. Because I don't like when she comes out. First of all, I get scared, and she doesn't play well with other people. So she hasn't come out in years. But in the work I've done for my own self, we all get to know her. We love her. We know why she's there. And we make sure that there's a bunch of us in front before she comes out anywhere. So a few months ago, I'm talking and I'm hanging out. And a gentleman is talking to me. And then all of a sudden, I feel like this, ugh. I'm like, what was that? And then I hear this, ugh. I'm like, oh, something cool is not happening right now. And I'm trying to listen and I'm trying to focus in, like, what's the behind the story and what's he really saying? And did he really say that? Did he mean that? Like, and all my parts are starting to flare up and everybody's out looking like, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on here? And I'm, ugh, oh, and I'm like, okay, this is not good. So then I hear, I'm like, uh-oh. Did you try girls out? She's out. And I'm like, okay, she's out. Everybody. So we're like closing up the shutters, closing the door, like locking everything, like negotiator, like help, you know, Detroit girls out on the scene. So everybody gets realigned and in their proper positions. We've gone over this before and now we know what to do. So the negotiator comes out, like she's protecting, like all my tender sweet parts, they're gone now. They're gone. Like they don't like to be stabbed in the stomach. So the protector comes out and she's like, excuse me? And now the gentleman is like, whoa, something just happened. She just changed. There's a different reality. Now all of his parts are like, oh, I think I said something wrong. Wait, what? The. And he starts backpedaling. And she's like, mm-hmm. So everything calms down. And everyone's like, high five. Like, you, yeah, good. And then later during the day, to check in with our emotions is to have tea with our monsters. So my teacup is a pretty dainty little tea with roses on it, and it's just so sweet. So Detroit girl lives in the pine tree that I grew up in. My house is a pine tree. And it's not the Georgia pines where there's no branches up to 80 feet. It has branches, low branches. And this particular tree has a spiral staircase on the bottom. So I used to climb up the tree and sit in my tree house. Now, Detroit-style tree houses is just a 2x4 sitting on a couple of branches. But it's awesome because you could see the whole neighborhood and it's very peaceful. You're hanging out with the birds and the wind and you're paying attention to the sky. So that's where she lives. So I, you know, get my little tea set and I climb up the tree and I'm like, hey, how you doing? And she's like, I'm like, yeah, I know. I had a bad day. It's okay. Hey, look, I got some tea. Ginger tea with honey. Like, that's not going to work. And I'm like, I know. So, like, what came up for you today? Yeah, I know. He hurt our feelings. Yep, I get that. But, you know, his monster probably was coming out. He must have been having a bad day. And I get the look from the teenager, like, really, you gonna go there? And I'm like, listen, I'm not getting codependent or anything, but, you know, everybody's got their way about them. So that stuff that he was saying, it was probably more about him than us. But I appreciate that you wanted to come in and protect me. I know, people are disappointing. But, you know, sometimes I set my expectations too high. I know, we feel sad when people are mean. When people are mean, it makes us feel sad because we don't want to be light and shiny because people are mean. And I don't want you to be sad, and I know you're sad, and I know that's why you're mad. And I came up on this tree to tell you I love you. I love you, mad, sad, angry, ugly part monster. Oh, look, the tea's perfect temperature. You feel better? And that's how we work with our monsters. Because that monster can turn into a grudge holder, can turn into this obnoxious part, this defensive part, this defiant part. It adds more stress. So when we think about purification, we think about our baby, and we think about the elder, and we think about what do I need to do to become more aware to move in that direction. What level of consciousness, what elevator floor am I on right now? where I need to step it up a notch for awareness so I can have some clarity, because I don't like this stress. And in this clarity, I have the power to make good choices for myself because I'm precious. And then we can start creating heaven on earth, just like the baby has. When you look at an old person and you look at a baby and they don't have any languages, and you say, I wonder what they're saying. And they're saying, I am. I am. And they're good with just being, I am. I am here. I am here now. So this is the truth that I know, and I invite you to know that we are here, and that's all. That's all we need to be. The purification is in the knowingness that I am connected to the entire universe, and that's good enough. Thank you. Now we're going to move into a spiritual mind treatment, a prayer, affirmation, a remembering, a recalling of what is. So unfold your body and cross your arms and legs. There's one consciousness. One divine, beautiful vibration of truth, of purity, of love. The feeling of two big arms hugging us and holding us in every little moment of our discomfort. Saying, it's okay. Because it is okay. We're just one big messy thing that's full of love. It's okay. You're okay. I'm okay. This issue is temporary. No big deal. What's to remember is we are one. And when we have the universe backing us up, that's all we need to know. We can step out into the unknown because it's okay. In my purity consciousness, we are brave, giant-hearted, love itself. How delicious. We are our true self. All this chaos and stress, that's the illusion. Breathe in this love. This is purity. Feel the gratitude of knowing this together, today, now, here, now. Grateful. Peaceful. Connected, clean and clear. Releasing this into the consciousness because we are a part of this consciousness. No more edges, no more separation. Connection to our baby within, to our elder within, to the nothingness of everything. Releasing, allowing, and letting go. And so it is.